Time now on Southside Broadcasting for the Book of the Month with a very special co-presenter this time, not Jenny Finch, but Rob Nichols.
Our Book of the Month is The Mothman by Jenny Finch. Published just this year, The Mothman is the third instalment in a series of crime dramas where the setting of the Somerset Levels co-stars with young probation officer Alex Hastings. Alex and her associates at the probation office are recovering from a series of traumas that have rocked the normally tranquil surface of the Levels, but they will soon be rocked again. There is an evil menace afoot. A stalker is threatening the very equilibrium of this backwater and making women feel isolated and afraid to rest easy in their own homes. The Mothman actually provides an opportunity for one member of the gang. Dave Brown is the young policeman boyfriend of Alex's workmate Laura. The horrific crimes could be a ladder for fast-tracked advancement into a detective. The only problem is, like a real moth, the Mothman leaves no trail behind. There are no clues at all at the crime scenes. He leaves no impression on the windows where his unbridled exposure shatters the peace, tranquility and security of the victims. More worrying still, there is a real concern that he's becoming more daring and possessing even more of a threat.
It was all a bit serious, Alex thought, contemplating her plans for day centre groups. Of course, it needed to have some demonstrable value to the clients, and so classes in literacy and the new sessions on budgeting, cookery and basic hygiene, cunningly dressed up as life skills, were easy to sell to the magistrates. It was a lot harder to get the clients on board, however. There was a good take-up from the workshop days, especially with a new influx of unclaimed bikes recovered by the police and donated to the service. Some lads also enjoyed the basic woodwork on a Thursday morning, and Alex was grateful for the help offered by her colleague, Eddie Stroud, in running it. Her expertise was limited to simple repairs and changing a front door lock, not something she thought they should emphasise, given the clientele. There were some issues she was desperate to tackle, principally alcohol education, and she had a lot of ideas on how to make this effective and fun, but there were a couple of obstacles to overcome. Gordon had read through the outline earlier in the week and sighed. "I can't see why you want to do this, and I think you have some really good approaches," he said. "However, there are a few issues. Here," he pointed to the plan. "We cannot serve alcohol on the premises, I know." He held up a hand to forestall Alex's objections. "Tiny, taster glasses. We're not charging anything. It's for a very laudable cause, but..." He hesitated before continuing. "How do you think the magistrates will react if they find out they are sending someone with a drink problem to a group where they are offered more alcohol? And what do you think the press will make of it? Because they will hear it, and they most certainly will write something sensational and damaging." Alex returned to her office, depressed and despondent. The two strongest sessions both depended on using real beer. Not a lot, but enough to have an effect on the clients. The two most common arguments she heard from her drinkers were, "It don't affect me, none anyway, I can hold it." Manifestly untrue, otherwise how did they end up on probation for being drunk and disorderly? And, "I just likes the taste, that fake beer ain't the same." Alex had just treated herself to a small computer, a 64K machine that plugged into the back of her television. As well as trying to write simple programs, draw pictures and learning to use a database, she had experimented with the free games that came with it. Despite the fact they took an age to load and the tapes did not remember any high scores, she soon found herself hooked. Running a tiny ant around a maze or piloting a seemingly mentally defective builder across scaffolding full of holes was enormous fun, and she and Sue had once sat up until 2 a.m, reluctant to stop playing while they were still winning. Amongst the cassettes, she had found a motorcycle racing game and several weeks ago had challenged her friends to a tournament. She was amazed to find how rapidly her ability to manipulate the bike on the screen deteriorated. One glass of wine was all it took for her to start crashing out on previously easy corners. If only she could get the alcohol education group to try it, she thought. Let them play around, then take a small drink and then try it again. The results could be striking, but how on earth could she manage it? Setting the plans aside with a sigh on her own, she pondered the idea of setting up some more creative groups. Perhaps photography, she thought. It would get them looking properly at their surroundings and offer the chance of some trips out of the town. The office had a minibus that was chronically underused, though Alex was not keen on trying her hand at driving it. There was also the cost of the equipment, but but she had started drifting round the auction rooms on a Saturday morning and only last week had spotted a box of cameras, old-fashioned but quite serviceable. Some of those are cheap and larger and a bit of money for supplies, and she could get a small darkroom set up in the room next to hers. It was just a dumping ground at the moment and was more poorly lit than her office. Of course, she would have to supervise it very closely. A lot of the day centre clients were too young and almost exclusively male. There were not much more than a bunch of kids sometimes, and there were some types of photography she definitely did not want to encourage.
The books are set 30 years before the levels gained the national infamy for the severe flooding of the last two winters. So we're pitched back into the 1980s, but there are no shoulder pads or grey yuppie pads in a land that time apparently forgot. Time maybe, but not Margaret Thatcher, because as the Iron Lady prepares to win a second term, the mantra of Thatcherism is seeping into the probation service, where management speak, lists, stats and national standards are elbowing aside the human touch. And down on the levels, folks are experiencing desperate straits of unemployment and a new form of isolationism. Jenny Finch recognises this as a crossroads for the region. An old way of life is under threat at a time when the whole country is being shaken from the top and centre. This backwater is being reluctantly pulled into the rat race as incomers make inroads, quite literally as holidaymakers passing through to Cornwall or Devon, or more permanently, in new homes. These new homes, built on floodplains, might not just be threatening the harmony of the 1980s, they might well be a ticking time bomb for the 21st century.
On the train down to Dartmoor, Iris sat and stared out of the window, her stomach twisting and clenching with anxiety. She had put it off so often, she scarcely knew how to broach the subject of Newt's father now. When she had hinted at the fact that her husband Derek was not his biological father, Newt had listened, but not pursued the topic. He had seemed more concerned about Biff, his younger brother. Despite being so different, Newt and Biff had been very close, and Iris knew her son missed his little brother very much. "You can't blame yourself," she had insisted at their last meeting. "Was not your fault the police was waiting for you at the post office? And was nothing you could do once they separated you both? Biff made his own choices, though God knows they were right stupid ones." She stopped, unable to continue as she blinked back tears. Locked up alone in a custody cell, left to sweat it out in the hope he would give up the rest of the gang who were targeting local post offices, Biff had managed to hang himself with the blanket they'd given him for the night. In theory, someone should have checked on him every half hour or so, but somehow he was forgotten, left alone with his own thoughts and fears. There was the suspicion it was all a horrible accident, and Biff had been trying to gain sympathy and attention, a play for leniency when he was up in court. But if so, he had misjudged the whole situation badly. Newt still felt responsible for his brother's death, she knew. He was the clever one, the leader who directed and moderated Biff's undoubted talent for violence and intimidation. Newt was the one who devised the post office raids. He had the uncanny ability to shin up walls as if he had suckers on his hands and feet, a talent he put to good use when indulging his propensity for burglary. Together, the brothers had wrought havoc across the levels until they were betrayed, caught red-handed breaking into their fifth post office in a month. Sentenced to 2 years in Dartmoor, Newt had plenty of time to think about his future. With his father and brother gone, his view of the world changed dramatically. He watched his mother struggling with her grief, reflected on the events that had brought the remains of his family to their current sorry state, and decided he needed to look for another line of work when he got out. As an escapee, he found his options severely limited for the first part of his sentence. The authorities took a dim view of his escapade, and for a number of months showed no signs of restoring any but the most basic of privileges. Their suspicions were further raised when news of his father's actions filtered through to the prison. In their eyes, he was the son and sole heir to Derek John's criminal empire, a little gang lord in the making, and they kept a strict lookout for any signs of the organisation within the walls of Dartmoor Prison. Prison life was hazardous enough without allowing imported gang rivalries to flourish unchallenged. Newt resigned himself to a long, Spartan stretch inside, a hiatus in his young life made lonelier by his determination not to play leader to the men from the levels who appeared and then vanished with depressing regularity. The Somerset inmates were hurt and angry at his rejection of their homage, and many of the other prisoners were too scared by his family's reputation to respond to any overture of friendship he might make. It was only when Alex Hastings, on one of her regular visits, raised the subject of post-release employment that the authorities agreed to let Newt attend the classes available to his cohort.
The characters in this book are all vividly portrayed and very believable. I guess that is why we readers are desperate for each new instalment in this series. We need to know how the politics of the probation service will play out, equally how life will unravel on the levels for the hardy folk still living off the fruits of their land. For the first time in this series, we get an insight into a new aspect of the private life of Alex Hastings. Previously, the private and personal had been so closely melded together that it's perhaps invited the dark cloud of physical breakdown that hovered overhead. But there should be no worries about dropping into this series at any point. There is always plenty of explanation of past episodes and escapades. You won't feel lost on the levels, but why would you not want to read the first two books?
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Jenny has a gift for coming up with stunning book titles. It's hard to resist the lure of Death of the Elver Men or The Drowners. Maybe she should be writing newspaper headlines or a sideline of perhaps hiring herself out to rock bands in search of inspiration for their latest album titles. The Mothman certainly does draw you in. It's a real page-turner. Jenny writes at a pace suited to the rural backdrop, giving room and time for her characters to work and try to rest and play. But the pace ramps up as the plot unfurls, as Alex and co. get a little too close for comfort to the mysterious and unsettling Mothman. Will he be caught? And will Somerset ever be on the level again?
Outstanding. There we are, Book of the Month. Normally with Jenny Finch, but this time Rob Nichols. And, of course, special guest in the studio, that would be the fabulous Reverend Marie Edwards. How are you, Marie?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Excellent. So, here we are, the third instalment in the Alex Hastings series. And for obvious reasons, we felt that the author... I know the official postmodern line is death of the author. Once the book has been released into the world, it's up to others to decide what they make of it in terms of meaning, etc. It's been let go. It's fluttered away in all sorts of ways, etc. Rob, you've already stated your routine. Marie, your first ever Book of the Month. What did you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, I'm used to reading my books on my Kindle, so the amount of times I try to flick the page across without actually turning the page. But, I agree with a lot of what Rob has said, actually. It certainly does draw you in, and I've thoroughly enjoyed reading it. It is a much slower pace that I'm used to, but it did keep you hooked and keep you wanting to read more. So, brilliant.
I got a sense, really, of it being very similar to the notion of Heartbeat, but with Alex Hastings. Heartbeat for the 80s. I mean, Heartbeat obviously set in the 60s, but I can see there were an awful lot of stories running alongside each other in this, which I actually quite enjoyed overall, because we obviously had the tale of the detective Dave. We had Alex, we had her romantic sort of connections, we had Alex's mother, we had a whole heap of other scenarios there, and of course we had the sort of driving force of my own personal favourite from the early characters, that would be Ada, of course, who I think I love the sort of sequence about the electricity board, it's good, it was sorted through on that basis, and as we said in the discussions, not sure whether even in the 80s the notion of actually running a series of exercises for probationers with real alcohol. But that's left. I mean, I can see that emerging because we have the spectre of the new superintendent, the new head of the department, who's coming down, who seems to be a friend of somebody who necessarily doesn't seem to be the best of things. So lots of little subplots, which is why I thought it was great. Any other sort of points, Marie, that you sort of felt about the whole thing? Did you feel the characters were well rounded? Because I know Jenny was a little bit concerned. He thought might be a bit too gruesome for you at times.
Yes, I really shouldn't show what else I've got on my Kindle on the back of that. I did. I thought, the human side of the characters was well brought out as well, and as you were was saying, there's lots of different subplots, but not to the point where you were confused about what you were reading. So it was very clear which plot you were actually reading about and how the characters were unfurling in those plots. So very easy to read along and keep track of what was happening, despite all of the busyness of it. And the characters were great, yeah. I mean, you really sort of felt yourself feeling for the ones that were struggling and hoping that the not-so-nice ones would get their comeuppance at some point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, so well drafted. And I thought the writing was... I loved the death of the Elvermen. I loved the Drowners. I think this one very much it has a further enhancement in terms of the colours of confidence. I mean, Jenny made the point, I think, in the last one about Ian Lennox or a couple of books a month ago, and his writing actually improved. I mean, it just flows. There is a confidence there which worked well. It's time for the... well, two things, actually, because we forgot, actually, last time, the more aficionados of the thing will realise that we didn't have a mark out of 10 for the Rorschach text.
That's true.
We didn't. So what was your mark out of 10 for the Rorschach text?
So you're going to make me mark two books?
Yes.
I have to go 9 for the Rorschach text.
Nine for the Rorschach text, yeah. Book. I would go with that. I'd go for 9. And I think Jenny was probably a 9 as well. Marie, just the 1 for your good self. The Mothman.
Oh, I didn't realise I was going to have to mark it out of 10. Yeah, I would say a 9, actually, because I did thoroughly enjoy it. It was really, really good.
Okay,
yeah.
Rob?
Yeah.
Well, I think you've got kind of mark it on the series, in a way.
Yeah.
So we'll go for a 9, because it's a series that's... I really want to read the next instalment.
Very tempted to use the "I'll give it 5," but no. I'll give it 9, because after all, we do have Jenny French online. Good morning, Jenny. How are you?
Good morning, Alex.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
You see, you've been listening in, have you not, to the whole sort of prequel sequence? So
I have. Yes, somebody rang me and said you want to listen to this. So I did.
There you are. Yeah, it's all connected together. So, Marie, chance to ask Jenny some direct questions about the thing now. I mean, hopefully she's satisfied with the final sort of score. I think it was a reasonable score on that basis.
I hope so. I mean, I've sort of given it an eye because I am quite intrigued, and I think I do want to go out and get the other two books. So just really sort of how you, when you first set off to write a book or think about writing a book, where your ideas come from and how you sort of work into putting them together. For example, the hidden treasure bit with how you decide how they're going to find the hidden treasure and that type of thing, just how you get your ideas for your plots.
A lot of them have got a tiny bit of a true story in them.
Okay.
The Mothman is based on a real Dutch criminal who did something similar and was never caught. And the buried treasure story is actually based on something that the real life Sue, who's the only real character in it, told me about 18 months ago.
Right, well.
So you've got a lot of things that I experienced down in Somerset and that I've experienced in my life mixed in with. You sort of take an idea and you go, I wonder what if, and then see where that idea takes you.
Well.
Yes, I can't imagine in Saltburn there are many people actually strip naked and run themselves up against... no, I can't even go there. It's just, no, it's important. I've got to ask the question, though, Jenny. In terms of the alcohol scene, was that based on fact?
That is based on fact.
Wow.
We actually ran those sessions. The outcome was interesting, as you'll find out if you read the fourth book. We actually ran those sessions. And actually they were extremely successful, but they had a few side effects.
Yeah.
Alcohol does.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's called a hangover.
And it reaches all the parts.
Yeah, congratulations, obviously, in order as well, because, Jenny, you're also taking part in a virtual sense in another international book festival. Would you like to just plug that whilst you're online?
Thank you, yes. I was contacted by the Festival of the Word in Montserrat and asked if I would like to attend. I can't, for all kinds of reasons, but I was very honoured to be asked. So I've sent the books over and asked that they go into the library. So the Somerset Levels arrive in Montserrat any day now.
It's getting exciting. And, I mean, clearly, we marked your sort of text at Jenny, so from your point of view, I mean, obviously Rob was the first choice substitute to actually step in to the bench in many ways from that point of view. Do you feel he kind of kept the Book of the Month chair warm for your good self?
I have to say, I'm extremely worried that he's going to push me off the Book of the Month. He did a fabulous job. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks.
Well, keeping it for the Stu Goodsell journey to effectively announce what the Book of the Month for November is going to be, because it's one of your personal favourites, but I think you'll be back in the chair to actually anchor the whole thing, and we're back into the realms of science fiction and what if. And actually, Marie, I think you'll thoroughly enjoy this one, although I don't want to sort of preempt the whole thing, because it actually talks about all manner of things relating to being human. Over to you, Jenny.
Yes, it is, in fact, Matt Haig's Stunning the Humans. There, one of my favourites.
Sorted through. I think a round of applause for Jenny French for actually sticking online, listening to the whole thing, connecting all the rest of the little bits and pieces there. Jenny, we salute you. Take care. We're going to go on now to do a whole range of other bits and pieces, including, of course, Fly Me to the Moon and other things. But for now, it's the end of the podcast of Book of the Month. So, Rob, many thanks indeed. How did you feel stepping into the chair, by the way? Because obviously the first time you'd actually done that whole thing. And
It was hard to...
You're like a third doctor in many ways.
I know, exactly.
Jill Appleton.
A lot to live
Jenny
up to.
Jenny Finch, she says.
Yeah, pressure.
precisely so. Still, very well indeed. And Marie, are you back again with us next month?
Yes, if you would like me to be, that would be good.
I think so. Jenny, do you think she passed the test? Do you think she can come on the team?
I would look forward to meeting her.
There you are.
Me too.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium. Hang on, slow down.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right,
or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989, or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.